Hi, I'm Heather Mulder.
And I'm Janice Greeno, and you're listening to Dementia Untangled, where we explore the topic of dementia through conversations with physicians, experts, and community leaders.
Our discussions focus on innovative ideas, practical strategies, and proven methods to guide caregivers along a supportive path.
Hello, and welcome to Dementia Untangled. We are so glad you've joined us for this episode of our podcast.
Today, I think you're really going to enjoy our conversation. We're going to be talking with Hella Brand, who is a physician assistant at Banner Alzheimer's Institute in Tucson. And we're going to be discussing what a lot of caregivers perceive as one of the most frustrating parts of the disease process, which is repetition.
Heather, if you've ever been in a car with someone who keeps asking, "Are you there yet?" I know you understand the frustration that can come with that.
Absolutely. And, you know, in my experience, repetition comes in all different forms and for many different reasons in dementia. You know, I recall when I was working in long-term care early in my career, a woman who was constantly asking, what's scheduled? And, you know, we would just have to patiently answer that question over and over and over again. And looking back on that, you know, knowing now what I know, I wish I could have kind of helped her through that a little bit better. But repetition kind of comes from part of the disease process, but also a behavior.
It's so interesting when you think about repetition and how frustrating it can be. In that moment, you're not really thinking about the science behind repetition. But if you know some tips and tricks in advance, they really can help you through those difficult times.
Absolutely. And I think you bring up a great point. So much that can be frustrating with dementias, if we just understand where it's coming from, what the root of it is, it's so much easier to handle that in the moment. And so I'm really excited to have Hella with us to help us untangle repetition. But before we get started, Hella, tell us about your journey. What led you to connect with the dementia community?
I think probably having my grandmother with Alzheimer's disease and seeing the changes in her opened my eyes, but I didn't know it at the time. And then as I did my initial career work in physical therapy, I really, really liked the geriatric population. I worked in nursing homes, I worked in rehab, I worked in pediatrics and adult developmentally disabled. So all in the cognitive realm, all in the behavioral realm. And then when I went back to school for becoming a physician assistant, you know, I thought, well, based on pediatrics and all that, that would be my career choice. But I happened to have two really good professors who taught geriatrics and included dementia in that. And then my rotations, my clinical experiences were phenomenal. And I knew I had found my passion. I started out in true nursing homes, and then went to work in a memory disorders clinic and back in upstate New York, and was lucky enough to connect with Dr. Terrio, who left there to come to start the Banner Alzheimer's Institute in Phoenix, and invited me to come along and be part of that exciting process. So I feel like all the choices I made, as curvy as the road was along the way, led me to where I am today. And then along the way, my dad also developed dementia. And so it was interesting for me to see the difference in how the approaches were made to my grandmother versus what I knew and understood of dementia and could help support my family with my father. So just that evolution over years too. So it's exciting to be part of that whole process.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize you had such a varied background, and it really explains how you are able to kind of connect the dots and help people relate through their life experiences. So let's just try to start at the beginning here. I think when I'm out teaching classes and working with the community, one of the biggest concerns, I guess, that people have is, how do you distinguish between normal aging and dementia? And can you kind of speak to that in the context of repetition?
Okay, well, normal aging, we're, I'm going to back it up a one step first. If we think about the process of learning and committing things to memory and being able to retrieve from our memory banks, it's all about repetition as we're growing up. We learn nursery rhymes because our parents sing them to us over and over and over again. And in school, we learn math, we learn our ABCs, we learn all of that because of rote and repetition. And then we, even as, you know, as we're going through, when we're even trying to do a talk like today, right, you practice it in your head, you do it over and over again, so that it feels more natural. Now, as we get older, we're a little bit slower in processing. And yeah, we might have some forgetful moments. We all walk into a room and say, why are we here? And that, I think the difference is, as we look in the memory spectrum, there's normal aging with that, you know, occasional trouble coming up with the name, wondering why I'm in a room. I can't remember how to spell this word, but if we just stop for a minute and kind of recollect, it comes to us. So the difference is, how often are we having that problem? Is it affecting other areas of our life? Are other people commenting on how many times, oh yeah, you already told that story, for instance, right? I know even some of us can relate, when you have health issues, you've got 27 people checking in on you, and it's hard to remember who you told what story. But if you're the same person is telling, no, you already told, you know, we already talked about that. So you're seeing more frequency. And by the time we get to dementia, it's, I'm not remembering as well. I'm more forgetful. I'm more repetitive. And I'm having trouble doing tasks that I did automatically. That's a big difference. That's when we move to dementia. And the gray zone in between normal aging to dementia is what we call mild cognitive impairment, where subjectively we feel that our memory isn't as good as it used to be. Others have said, I noticed that. And it's, memory doesn't stand alone. There can be subtle changes like language, coming up with words, for instance, or more problem solving difficulties doing math, for instance, in our head. But in mild cognitive impairment, people are still able to continue doing tasks and chores as they always have. And then they begin to have problems that moves them into dementia. And interestingly, you know, one of the compensatory or coping mechanisms that we recommend for people is that use of repetition. Write things down, make notes, just like you would have written notes in school, and you would have studied your notes and maybe made subnotes. So we look to see, do those compensatory strategies work, or is there even more trouble with memory? So even though it's written down, I'm not remembering it. Then we might start to see the repetition associated with dementia that I constantly hear from caregivers. It drives me crazy. How many times can you answer the same question in a given day?
Hello, that's such a great answer to that question. How do you distinguish between normal aging and dementia when it comes to repetition? And it's so interesting that those same compensatory kind of strategies that you shared with us about, that we used when we were children, we also can use those for someone who's going through dementia. But I'm just wondering, when it comes to repetition, one of the things we like to do on this podcast is really untease the science.
Tell us what is going on behind the scenes. What is happening in the disease of dementia that causes repetition to happen?
Well, I think if we look purely at sort of the anatomy of the brain and the initial changes, mind you, I'm speaking predominantly of Alzheimer's disease in terms of the changes in the brain, because that's most of the dementias. But we start to see shrinkage or atrophy in the hippocampus. And that is important for two things. That's where we have our short-term memory, and that's where we have our new learning. So fairly early on in Alzheimer's disease, we see problems with short-term memory, and we see problems with new learning. Oh, we bought mom a new smartphone for Christmas thinking it would help her, and she can't seem to retrieve her messages. She can't seem to do this. She can't seem to do that. Or we got a new microwave and she has no clue what to do because the buttons are different than they were before, right? So there's actually a physical change in the brain that is causing it. And then when we, break down the steps, what's actually potentially contributing to that repetition? So one, let's just understand that short-term memory loss means that it's forgetfulness, but it's about forgetting chunks of information. And that's things that I just heard, saw, or did, something I experienced, and it's lost to me. So if we can understand that even though you've given an answer to your person with dementia, when the short-term memory loss is significant enough, that is not registering, it is not staying with them, and so they're going to repeat themselves. That can be repetitive stories because they're living more in the past. So they're talking about things that they remember, right? That can be repetitive questions. Typical one, now when are we doing this? And that's another potential contributing factor to repetition. So very close to the time that people begin to have progressively more forgetfulness, loss of short-term memory, they also begin to lose their sense of time, their orientation or awareness to time. So they don't appreciate how long it's been since something happened, how long until something happened. They tend to live very much in the now. So if you put those two together, even though you told me something 5 minutes ago, I'm asking you, it may feel like it was 2 weeks ago. And to your point of that driving situation with them, when are we going to get there? a unique cause of repetition often, and that's what we call anticipatory anxiety. So I'm a little anxious, worried, or concerned about something in the future. Let's say we know that company is coming, or we have a trip planned in 2 weeks, and every day, now when are we going? Now when are they coming? Now when? The other behavior that can happen is, along with that repetitive questioning, can be being ready unnecessarily early. So it speaks to, I can't track the time one way or another. And in that case, the cure is stop announcing the future. So we don't talk about future events until the day of, and that lets go of that. But it also conveys another possibility in terms of what contributes to repetition, and that is a hidden concern. So sometimes they'll ask questions because they can't come up with the sort of the phrase, the language, the expression of what they're really worried about. So for instance, let's take anticipatory anxiety, and people are coming. Sometimes if we just say, why are you asking? It may reveal that hidden concern. How are we going to pay for all of this? Where are they all going to sleep? Who's coming, and just all the details, because the mind gets tangled up in details. So if we can identify that hidden concern and provide reassurance, that may alone let some of the repetition go away.
Those are such interesting points. And I can think back to countless stories from caregivers about sharing that information too early and it causing problems with things like repetition. And that's right. Hard to unlearn those exactly. ways that you communicated with this person
right. Right.
for many, many years potentially.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that is the challenge when you are living with and serving as a caregiver, care partner in whatever you know role you are, is having to be flexible, having to be creative, having to be resilient. Because while in the very early stages, you can still talk about the future. You can have that master calendar with every appointment and event on it. And they can look at it as that short-term memory loss gets worse. The minute they turn around, that information is lost. Well, then you have to keep an eye, you know, am I seeing anxiety? When am I seeing it? So this is where the detective work comes in. And is it about worry about future events? So if I let go of the future and just focus on today, does the anxiety and the repetitive questioning go away? Mm-hmm. And there's an in-between step where sometimes you can use a whiteboard. So rather than the big master calendar, again, with too many details on it, and that can cause almost more anxiety because now I'm seeing all of this, but I can't put it in perspective. But if there's a whiteboard that just tells me these three things are on the schedule today, we will have fun, this, we have an appointment, I might be able to refer to that. So sometimes that's a simple technique. Did you check your board or give them an index card with the same information that they can just tuck in their pockets, or I've got women who tuck them in their bras. And again, you just say, oh, did you check your card?
You know, I've been working with a gentleman who is in the early stages of Alzheimer's. And so he's trying to find ways to cope with the changes. And he's become a big fan of like the Google Homes and those sorts of things, because you can say, hey, Google, set a reminder for me.
Yes.
And he ended up setting a reminder 5 times for the same appointment.
Uh-huh.
So sometimes slightly humorous things can come out of this as well.
Yeah. And I do think, exactly.
Google, that's enough.
In the early stages, there is this sort of kind of, some people have more awareness of their problems than do others. And in those cases, I think people are trying really hard to hold on to who they are and what's coming up and, you know, kind of live the life they've lived. And so, right, if I ask that same question over and over again, I'm trying really hard to learn the information and to retain it as I would have in the past. Mm-hmm. But in early stage, the compensatory mechanism might be, you know what, write it down, put it on your calendar, you know, just that simple card or whatever, so that you don't create overload in the brain that can create anxiety and a whole host of other behavioral responses.
So I love the ideas that you shared about the index cards and the whiteboard. And I also love the thought of finding out what that hidden concern is. I'm wondering if you can talk to us a little bit more about how we can be better listeners and respond out of a place of curiosity instead of a place of frustration.
Yeah, well, you know, as I said, I think why are you asking is probably a really good question. I think first and foremost, it's really easy to get irritated. It's really easy to focus on the negative. This repetition drives me crazy. And and not seeing anything else but that. So it is sometimes about seeing the logic, you know, why they might be doing this, or identify that concern. You know, what's bothering you? This seems to be coming up a lot. What's bothering you? Or being the detective and thinking, is there something else that they're worried about? And which, you know, when we talk in the behavioral realm, we talk about unmet needs. So if they're not able to communicate what they're feeling or thinking, are they in a way acting it out? So is it more a question of being hungry or tired or bored, and needing something to address that? So paying attention to the body language, I think helps in that respect. And then I think the other part is, one, take a deep breath in the moment. You're human.
Of course.
In that deep breath, what you're doing is collecting yourself so that you come from patience and not impatience. And I think that's important because as dementia progresses, the person with dementia becomes more and more engaged with what they see on your face and in your body language. So if you're communicating stress or anxiety, anger, impatience, that creates the same for the person with dementia. Now you have a situation that's just escalating, right? It's just right. Building. So take that deep breath to collect yourself, to give yourself permission to just say, you know, I'm human, this is tough, but I'm going to get through it. I think that's an important part. So now you come from patience. You're being exactly where you need to be in terms of learning, right? That's right. The whole process of going through any kind of dementia with someone is really about understanding it. Why are we seeing the symptoms? How do they contribute to other symptoms? The changes in the brain, how do they contribute to the symptoms? How do they contribute to the functional changes? So when you understand something, again, you tend not to get blindsided. When you're blindsided, you're reactive. And we're talking about being proactive. So it's learning now about things that you might run up against or that are maybe mild and we don't want them to build. And it's about having, you know, we often talk about tools in the tool chest, right? And right. A tool for a caregiver is a coping mechanism, right? So it's learning, okay, I might have to ask, why are you asking? I might have to see the body language and offer or food or drink as a distraction, or say, I don't know about you, but when I'm worried about things, I feel better when I go for a walk. Let's try it, right? So now I'm creating a distraction and a redirection. That's another effective tool.
Now, I think we focused a lot of our conversation on the early and the moderate stage of dementia, but does repetition continue into the advanced stage of the disease as well?
Yeah, there are probably, you know, not as typical, but sometimes we can see something called echolalia. And that is this kind of automatic repetition of what they've just heard coming back at you. It's kind of an imitative behavior. I give the example of driving myself crazy with my brother growing up. We would just see who could last the longest. So whatever he said, I said back, and then he'd say something back. And, you know, it was just driving each other kind of, it was distraction for ourselves.
Yes, I remember doing that.
Yes, exactly. So you can sometimes see echolalia that tends to happen, particularly when the left side of the frontal part of the brain has more impairment in it. Other ways that we see repetition, although it's more kind of creating diversion at that point, and it's impairment of language. So I've lost the words to say what I'm thinking, but we often see people playing with rhyming sounds, for instance, and just repeating those over and over again, humming the words instead of being able to talk about them. And because it goes intermittently through the day again, sometimes that can be wearing for a caregiver. It's not a negative behavior, but it's repetitive and there's no in between. And so it can be wearing.
You know, when you think about the word repetition, I know that there's a positive side and a negative side to every coin. So if repetition were a coin, are there any benefits of repetition that we should be focusing on?
I think, you know, from the caregiver perspective, I think providing a clear, simple, brief, consistent message in response to the question. So you've eliminated the hidden concern and you just are dealing with this sort of memory and time awareness, so that you don't feel like I have to come up with the long explanation. But when we have consistency, predictability, repetition in our daily routine, in our responses, it creates comfort for the person with dementia. And when we have comfort, then we tend to reduce potential for behaviors.
That's powerful.
I agree. Thank you so much, Hella, for offering your perspective and helping us untangle repetition. I wonder if you have any final gems of wisdom, or what is the big takeaway that our listeners should take from this discussion today?
I think the big takeaway really is, first and foremost, remember this is a memory problem. This is not something that is being done willfully and deliberately to irritate you. So when you have that perspective and you understand its memory, its time awareness, its language changes and trying to communicate something that they can't express, when you have that understanding, it makes you better able to cope with it. Realize that with memory, it's about providing reassurance. It is about providing constancy, that predictability and routine, that predictability in what you say to me. So the message kind of just resonates with me. And experiencing success with doing that, then I think goes back to you as caregivers in reducing your own anxiety and frustration. And I think the other is just, you know, sometimes you just need to step out of the room and come back in terms of collecting yourself and remember that distraction and redirection. So getting them off of the question by saying, I'm hungry. I was thinking about getting a snack, or let's go for a walk. That helps me think, what can I use as a diversion to kind of get off of the questioning and move to something else.
Well, thank you again, Hella Brand, physician assistant with Banner Alzheimer's Institute in Tucson. I think this has been a really helpful discussion this morning that our listeners will be able to take a lot from.
Great.
Thank you, Hella. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Dementia Untangled. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Dementia Untangled is hosted by Heather Mulder and Janice Greeno, produced and edited by Amber Ayers, and is brought to you by Banner Alzheimer's Institute and Banner Sun Health Research Institute. We are supported by generous donations to the Banner Alzheimer's Foundation.
Please visit our website at banneralz.org. And follow us on Facebook to learn more about upcoming events. If you have questions or comments, please email us at dementiauntangled@bannerhealth.com.